Good afternoon. Let's go ahead and begin. This is a meeting of the Title Setting Board pursuant to Article 40 of Title I, Colorado Revised Statutes. The time is 1:05 p.m., and the date is May 20th, 2009. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Blue Spruce Conference Room, 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado, Suite 270. The Title Setting Board today consists of the following. My name is Bill Hobbs. I'm Deputy Secretary of State, and I'm here on behalf of Secretary of State Bernie Buescher. To my immediate left is Sharon Eubanks, Deputy Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, and she is here on behalf of the Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, Charlie Pike. To my immediate right is Dan Domenico, Solicitor General, who is here as a representative of Attorney General John Southers. To my far left is Maury Kanizer, Deputy Attorney General, who represents the Title Board. And to my far right is Ceci Gomez of the Secretary of State's office. Just some general information, procedural information. For anyone who wishes to testify, there are sign-up sheets on the table by the back door. This is a recorded meeting and broadcast over the Internet. The basic process for we have three new measures today. There's a three-step process for each new measure. The first step is to ascertain the meaning of each measure. We want to make sure that the Title Board understands each of the measures that come before us. And so I'll provide an opportunity for Title Board members to ask questions of the proponents in order to ensure that we understand each measure. The second step is to determine if the board has jurisdiction, jurisdiction to set a title. And a necessary question is whether each measure complies with the single subject requirement of the Constitution. Because if a measure does not comprise a single subject, we are prohibited from setting a title. And then finally, if the board determines that it has jurisdiction, the board will proceed to set titles. We will we typically work off of a staff prepared draft. A copy of the staff prepared draft is also on the table by the back door. Anyone who's dissatisfied with the decision of the Title Board today may file a motion for rehearing with the Secretary of State within 7 days of today. I want to emphasize that we are not concerned with the merits of any measure, but only with the setting of fair and proper titles. We are limited to 3 hours today. We will need to adjourn by 4 o'clock. So with that in mind, I would like to try to keep within a schedule that keeps us on track to be done by 4 o'clock. With that, I'd like to turn to the first agenda item, 2009-2010 number 18, state and local debt limitations. And I guess a question would be whether we want to take these together. I think we have same proponents and similar measures, so if there's no objection, maybe I'll consider both number 18 and number 21 together. Okay. So if we could hear first from the proponents, if a representative will come forward, identify yourself for the record, please, and who you represent.
My name is Russell Haas. I'm from Golden, and I represent myself.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you for hosting me.
I would like to, as I indicated, the first step is to make sure that we understand the measures, and maybe a place to start would be to compare and contrast the two measures. How are they different?
Well, we only have, in the bill, we only have two words, or not in the bill, but in the forms submitted to the Legislative Services on the Capitol, there are only two words difference. And those two words were merely to define or more clearly the borrowing. So.
Is that down in the last paragraph?
That will be in the last paragraph, yes.
So number 18 says, refers to changes equal to the average annual repayment, And number 21 refers to changes equal to its planned average annual repayment?
Yes.
Is that the only difference between the two?
That's the only difference between the two.
And what is the, and if you could elaborate just a little bit on the difference in meaning?
Well, we just think that B is not specific. The other two, Michelle, do you have a comment?
Yeah. Or maybe it's self-evident. I don't know. I just kind of curious what's behind. At this point, you're going forward with both measures.
Yes.
I might add that if we set titles for both, and I'll just go ahead and get this question out on the record. This is customary that you will not actually go forward with gathering signatures on both. You'll actually end
correct.
Up picking
only
one of these. Is that
only,
correct?
Only one effort.
Because then we would have a situation that's prohibited where we have similar or identical titles for this, the same measure.
We don't want that.
Okay. Sorry? Okay. And number 21, more specific. Okay. Any further questions for proponents? Ms. Eubanks.
Mr. Haas, just so that I'm correctly understanding the distinction between what's in paragraph I versus double I in terms of understanding the differences. Could you give me some examples of the authorities that are referenced as part of the state prohibition against borrowing or loans?
We have transportation authorities. We have housing authorities. This is what you're asking.
Well,
we have certificates of participation. I'm not sure this is an authority, but this is what this measure addresses.
Because from my experience, there are these authorities, but they're not actually part of the state. They're political subdivisions of the state, and so I was trying to figure out whether they, the ones like you've enumerated, would fall under paragraph I or double I.
Okay, I'm looking at I and double I. Can you tell me where you find authorities?
In the first line, it says the state and all its enterprises, authorities, and other state political entities.
Yes.
And so I'm just, since the kinds of authorities I think of are not actually part of the state government, they're political subdivisions of government, I was just curious as to the reference to authorities there versus the type of authorities I think of, whether they would fit under paragraph I because they're something other than the state, or whether they'd even be covered by your measure.
Well, I think we want the measure to cover authorities, be they created by state government in some form, in double I, or three is the case, or two as the case is, authorities easily may be created by, say, a metro district. We have multi-county creations, say, in the Denver metro area. If the local governments were to create an authority, then that comes under double I.
Okay. And because there's been an issue ever since Tabor has been on the books that there's a third category of entities, of special purpose authorities, that aren't covered by the terminology of Tabor as a state or local district. And since your provision is this particular provision of your initiative is adding to Section 20 of Article 10, it raises the question, at least in my mind, if your intent is to include authorities that currently aren't covered by Tabor, are they subject to any of the other provisions of Tabor?
Well, the measure 18 or 21, either one, seeks to control and prevent authorities from borrowing if they are on the state level, and does not allow authorities on the local level either.
Okay, thank you. In terms of that next sentence in paragraph I, where it talks about this ban covers any loan, whether or not it lasts more than 1 year, I assume that's then changing the current provision of Tabor in terms of allowing voter approval for multiple fiscal year financial obligations, that by that language, if something right now under Tabor isn't required to have voter approval because it's 1 year, it's not a multiple fiscal year obligation, this would prohibit even those types of loans?
I think the one what we tried to do was say if a provision that was presented to the voters was illegal under Tabor, they couldn't work around Tabor by presenting it.
Okay. And then just so that I'm understanding in this last sentence, because there's lots of different phrases. And so when it talks about this ban covers any loan, whether or not it lasts for more than 1 year, and then it has the semicolon, it says may default, semicolon is subject, and it goes on with these various phrases. Do all these phrases revert back to any loan or the ban? I just want to make sure I'm understanding.
Well, the ban covers all these phrases and anything else which may be created in the future. This is what we hope to do.
So when it says may default, what may default?
We do not want any loan or whatever that's outstanding to default. But from what we understand, certain certificates of participation have been declared legal because they can be defaulted. And we do not want the state to be issuing anything which will leave the, say, a bondholder holding the bag with something which has gone into default.
Okay, so all of these various phrases in this sentence refer back to the loan, to the reference to any loan?
Yes.
Okay, so when it says any loan, and I'm looking at the very last phrase of that sentence, offers any other excuse, exception, or form, I'm not sure I understand what
that
means.
Well, we're looking for, into the future, for a possible court decision which says this newly created instrument, which does not have a name on the list, still cannot be one that contracts a loan.
Okay. And lastly, in terms of paragraph I, am I reading it correctly in understanding that this is a ban on loans, however you may call them, in the future, but doesn't affect any current obligations of the
Correct.
State? In paragraph double I, and again, just so that I'm trying to understand sort of how the world works right now versus how it would work possibly under your initiative, that even if a loan doesn't currently require voter approval under Tabor for a local government, perhaps because it's a one-year loan or some other form, that regardless of that, now it would be subject to voter approval.
Yes.
Okay. in the second sentence of paragraph I, it talks about future borrowing may be prepaid without penalty and shall be bonded debt repaid within 10 years. Can you explain what that sentence means for me?
Well, if a county, city, or whatever found some money to pay off an obligation beforehand, it does not require that the tax that was to support this obligation go away immediately. And we're looking also at a time limit of 10 year on loans or debts or whatever. We had recently, in recent years, not very recently, in Jeffco with 30-year bond money buying trucks and snowplows. So 20 years after these trucks and snowplows would have been scrapped, the county was still paying principal and interest on that purchase.
And so in terms of anything that goes to the voters, it has to have a 10-year maximum life on it?
Yes.
Okay. In paragraph triple I, could you explain to me the second, well, I guess the third sentence that begins, except enterprise borrowing after each borrowing is fully repaid, current tax rate shall decline as voter-approved revenue changes equal to either the planned average annual repayment or just the average annual repayment, even though not repaid by taxes. Could you tell me what that sentence means?
Here we're similar to what we were discussing in the prior paragraph. Create a loan. It has, say, if it's 10 years, 10 payments, part principal, part interest. It could be paid off earlier. Let's see. And after that, the tax rate, which would have covered payments on this loan, shall go down.
But the sentence says, even though it's not repaid by taxes, and so if I could maybe use an example, say a municipality builds a parking garage with revenue bonds, and the revenue bonds are to be repaid by the fees charged for parking in the parking garage. So when those bonds are paid, does this sentence require the municipality's taxes to be decreased?
If the taxes were raised or in, they promoted but advertised to pay for this parking garage, then the taxes would have to go down.
But because it says even if not repaid by taxes, my question is, are taxes required to be reduced even though the loan or debt was not paid, taxes were not obligated for the payment of that loan or debt? Some other revenue stream was.
Well, are you talking about a currently existing parking garage or a parking garage in the future? If it's a currently existing parking garage, can be paid by certain amount or certain revenue streams. It's a future garage. It has to be specified where the money to pay off the obligations to build it comes from.
And for purposes of discussion, we could just say it's one in the future. Let's say it's something that was financed consistent with your initiative, assuming that it was approved.
Okay.
I'm not understanding what it means when it says, even if not repaid by taxes. To me, that seems like a government's taxes would be required to be reduced, even though taxes are not used to repay the borrowing?
We say that if the government, the local government, finds additional revenue and wants to save itself some money from interest payments in the future, it's not going to have to drop the taxes until the end of the 10-year or whatever the specific time period is.
Well, but, I mean, this sentence, in contrast to our earlier discussion about prepayment, this just talks about borrowing being fully repaid. It doesn't seem to be limited to early repayment. It's just whenever the borrowing is fully repaid, tax rates shall decline as voter-approved revenue changes, even if not repaid by taxes.
Well, if a government gets a gift, or who knows how the gift may come to it, and uses that money to pay off an obligation, in which case you're talking about a parking garage, it shall not have to lower its taxes until the end of the time period.
So is part of the point of this that so you build your parking garage, and while you're repaying the debt, you're bringing in this revenue and using it to pay off the debt. Once the debt is paid off, though, is the point of that sentence to make sure that the money that you continue to bring in from the parking garage or whatever it is doesn't go to the growth of government, that the
Correct.
Government
they
doesn't
cannot use that money that comes in for a secondary or a third or
okay,
fourth project.
So then that makes sense, and I think the answer to Ms. Eubank's question then is that yes, that would have to be repaid to taxpayers. Once the debt is paid off, the income has to go back to taxpayers. Now, I'm not entirely sure of the what average annual repayment or planned average annual repayment. I guess you could figure that out. But that's the way I read that, is that if you do have a revenue generating, if you do have a revenue generating resource like that, that it can only be used, the revenue can only be used to build the structure or payback taxes, essentially. Now, I'm not sure how that sentence would apply to non-revenue generating things that may be paid for by debt. If you have a snowplow or cars or that sort of thing, and you take out you get voter approval for, this is in the future, you get voter approval for a for bonds to pay for that. Once the bonds are paid off and these snowplows aren't generating any revenue, in that case, does the current tax rate have to continue to go down? Even though there's no revenue?
Well, if there was revenue to buy the snow, if there was revenue from a bond to buy the snowplows, and the snowplows were paid off, then there would be no further reason to have tax money flowing into the snowplow fund. I'm not sure that a snowplow is the best example, because I don't think a snowplow generates revenue.
That's exactly my point. It doesn't generate revenue. So I'm trying to figure out how you, what this would seem to say is, after you've paid off the bonds.
Which bought the snowplows.
Which bought the snowplows, current tax rates shall decline as voter-approved revenue changes equal to the average annual repayment. So if on average you paid $5,000 annually to pay this off, does that mean, as the plain language of that would seem to require, even if the snowplow doesn't create any revenue, that it would seem to require you to forever into the future cut tax rates by whatever the equivalent of $5,000 or whatever the average annual repayment was.
If you had an obligation for, say, 10 years to buy a fleet of snowplows,